This time it's more about developer stuff. We talked about a lot of servers and IT pro stuff here now. So how many of developers in here? That's good. So you come to the right room. How many of you like JavaScript in here? A few, more than I expected. I hated it before. Still do sometimes. So we're going to talk about JavaScript in SharePoint this time. And JavaScript is very accompanied with the new app model and everything. But JavaScript, is you can basically use it for anything in SharePoint. And we're going to take a look at how to load JavaScript, how to work with JavaScript in all kind of SharePoint solutions and all kind of SharePoint customization in this project. And we will take a look at the SharePoint app as a final demo. But in general, first of all, we'll go through some of the new stuff you can do with JavaScript. I'm going to show you specifically how to load JavaScript in a smart way so you don't add like 10, 20 different JavaScript and jQuery plugins on your master page. Do it in a proper way and delay load them and load them on demand. First of all, for you who haven't been here before, my name is Victor Wilén. I'm from Sweden, consultant there. I'm a Microsoft Certified Master and Architect. Written a couple of books. I'm also an MVP. And in my spare time, when not doing SharePoint, I spend time with my family and working with my body with our house. And my summer project was painting it, and I'm still not done. It's a real pain. So in this session, we will go through different kind of JavaScript customizations, what we can use JavaScript for when developing solutions for SharePoint. We take a look at the JavaScript libraries that's already in SharePoint and other kind of libraries that are very useful for when building JavaScript applications. I think most of you are familiar with jQuery. We also take a look at the Knockout library, which is one of my favorites. We take a look at two different techniques on how to retrieve and work with data in SharePoint, the client-side object model and the new REST interfaces. Finally, we take a look at one of the actually best things Microsoft, the product group made with the SharePoint is the client-side rendering or JS Link. It's a very easy way to customize the interface of lists and libraries in SharePoint. And we talk about some of the MDS issues. I don't think we have time to go deep dive into that one today, but we'll talk about some of the issues you need to watch out with. And I think Wayne is covering some more JavaScript later with the display templates in Search. But that's basically a lot of things in SharePoint 2013 are based on JavaScript. The whole Search interface is JavaScript rendered. Client-side, the cross-site scripting, a lot of that is Search, but it's based on JavaScript. So why do we use JavaScript? That's a difficult question. Is it quite difficult language to learn sometimes? Some people say it's easy because it is easy to write something, but to write good JavaScript is quite hard, actually, in my opinion, compared to writing C#, where you have something that's actually compiled. JavaScript isn't compiled, so anything can happen. And we have a lot of different clients, everything from Firefox, Chrome, Internet Explorer. They behave a little bit differently. So I think it's quite hard, but Scott Hanselman said JavaScript is the assembly language for the web. This makes quite sense. And the good thing with JavaScript is that we're actually not putting anything on the servers except the files. The execution are on the client, so we're not risking our SharePoint server. We're not executing stuff there. We're executing stuff on the client instead. As I said, easy to learn. Some say it is, some say it isn't. And one of the reasons, actually, 10 years ago, so I thought JavaScript was really good. We built some quite cool stuff with JavaScript, but it became more and more advanced and more things in. We built more and more things in JavaScript, and finally, we built so much that the actual client, since it runs on the clients would start rendering data slow, and that has, over the last few years, improved a lot, since the client hardware is better. But especially the different JavaScript engines in the different browsers are so much better today executing JavaScript. You can actually do some kind of really good business logic in our JavaScript implementations. Still have some examples where it doesn't fit. One customer, for instance, they have an old IE browser and not that capable hardware. We just used a simple jQuery rendering, moving between two images, fading in and out. And they made their computers slow down so much because of that rendering. They don't have any good GPUs on those machines. So you have to watch out with that. And it's a lot harder to test JavaScript as well. But it's no server-side code. That's the good thing. And it's easier to maintain, especially if you're in the app world. It's easier to maintain. You don't have to do any app pull recycles or that kind of things when you deploy it to the server. And also, it's the way to the cloud. It's a good way to prepare. Even you might not be able to go to 365 or other hosted services this year or next year. But start thinking about building JavaScript application is the right way. And you can accomplish a lot with that. So first of all, I'm going to go through a couple of JavaScript libraries that I will use throughout the demonstrations. And the reason for using JavaScript libraries, don't reinvent the wheel. There's so much good stuff out there made by the community, or I think that most of them are community made or owned, or at least for free. jQuery, of course. How many have used jQuery in here? That's quite a few, yeah, good. How many have used Knockout? Not that many. I'm going to show you later. That's a great model view model concept, and it's very easy to create good user interfaces with that, and decoupling business logic from the actual view. Modernizer, a great framework when using with HTML5 and CSS for browsers that aren't HTML5 compatible yet. Less is one of my other favorites. It's not directly a JavaScript library, but it's an easier way to write CSS. It's very easy that the CSS files are like 10,000 lines long after a while, and less helps you write much more smarter and efficient CSS files. And of course, we have SP Services, which is Mark Anderson's JavaScript library that uses the SharePoint web services, and you can do some quite good stuff with that, especially with the SharePoint 2010. But we're going to focus on SharePoint 2030 now, and Microsoft has improved the JavaScript object model or models quite a bit in this version. So we have native SharePoint JavaScript libraries. Unfortunately, there's a lot of undocumented APIs that I see a lot of people using, and there's a reason why they are undocumented. They're not tested and not intended for us to use, especially in SharePoint 2010. There were a few JavaScript libraries that we could use. So don't use everything you see in there, and don't use everything Microsoft is using in their own implementations, because that might change over time. But the documentation has gone better, and the public APIs are far more in 2030. We have a couple of things for the UI that we already had in 2010. For instance, modal dialogues. We have alerts and status messages. And the new thing in 2013 is callout, which we'll make a demo of quite soon, which is a really good implementation. We have a set of utility methods for writing JavaScript to get the current user, the language they're using, handling URL encoding, building URLs smarter instead of concatenating strings, and watching out for double slashes and the query string, etc. There are documented methods for this that you can use to build up smart strings or URLs. So please use that, but make sure to check on TechNet or MSDN first that is documented and a public API. And there's the script on demand. Script on demand is a really good feature for lazy loading your JavaScript, so you don't have 10 different libraries or JavaScript files in your master page that's being loaded, parsed, and executed on every single page request. How many of you have used the script on demand in here? Not that many. I'm going to show that in the first demo as well, how to use that. But first, let's just take a look at some of the things we're not going to demo, but it's worth knowing that these services are JavaScript enabled. First of all, Excel services. Excel services is great for BI features, and not just only BI, but reporting of any kind. And there's actually an API for that known as Excel Web Access, Excel EWA. I think it's Excel Web Access, yeah. Where you can actually read cells and recalculate the dashboard, the Excel services dashboard. And so it's really good if you're going to make dashboards and BI solutions. Visio Services also has a JavaScript API, so you can trigger on when user clicks on a specific shape in it and direct to another page or make changes to that. Which is, we talked about SCOM earlier. SCOM, you can create a Visio diagram of your SharePoint farm and have the servers blinking in red and green, and etc. You can have JavaScript to that to make an even more better SCOM implementation or reporting service for your IT ops team, for instance. So let's start with the script on demand, how to register JavaScript. I already mentioned, okay. You want that? Okay, yeah, now you can hear me, good. So we'll talk about how to register JavaScript. As I said previously, even though JavaScript are cached on the client when you're downloading them, each JavaScript is downloaded is going to be parsed and executed by the client each and every time. So if you have 10 different libraries you're downloading, that's going to be executed and parsed every time. So it's a waste of client resources just hard coding in them as link tags in the script tags in the master page. So it's better to load them on demand. For instance, when a user clicks on something or acts upon something, or even after the UI has rendered, because we want to have a good perceived performance. And that's one of the things that the SharePoint product team actually improved in 2013 a lot. That it's faster for you to act upon the page. Because we delay load a lot of JavaScript, that's not necessary. It's important that users can actually do what they're coming to the site to do. For instance, open a document, look at a document, or watch items in a list. And perhaps those social features and share features, that JavaScript doesn't have to be the first thing that's loaded. That can be loaded half a second or a couple of, or a second later. Or when someone click on that specific link. So, we don't want to cause these extra round trips, as I said. And the key to this is to use the script link server-side control and the combination of the script on demand, the SOD methods. The script links actually, script link control has has an attribute where you can set on demand equals true or false. If you set it to false, it will be a normal script link. If you set it to on demand, it will actually be a JavaScript that's injected, that's just registering the JavaScript file. So you can tell the client that upon when this event happens, then you should load the JavaScript file. And this is really important as well if you're thinking about the MDS, minimal download strategy, where there's partial updates of the page. So script on demand works like this, that it allows you for lazy loading, that is delay load the file, or load on demand when a specific event happens. And then you can have triggers on that. When this JavaScript file is downloaded, execute this method, for instance. And you can trigger on when the file is downloaded or when a JavaScript object exist. So here's a quick sample of that. Assume I have a custom JavaScript file called myscript.js. At the final line in that page, I send away this notify script loaded and execute waiting jobs method with a unique ID of my script. It's normally the relative path of the script, but it could basically be any kind of string. The key here is to always use lowercase. There's a bug in, or I don't know, could be feature in the API that you must have a lowercase characters. Then, if it's in a visual web part, for instance, or in the master page, you use SharePoint:\script-link tag, tell them which file to use, and then specify on demand equals true. This means that only a small
JavaScript will be injected with this link to the file. And then finally, in your client code, use spsod.executefunc with your name matching that one up here. If you want a specific object, so it checks that this object has been created or that is not undefined, to be exact. And then a function to execute. We will see this in action in a couple of seconds. So it's really easy to use. It can be complex if you have dependencies between JavaScripts or dependencies on objects, etc. But I think it's a really great way to improve the perceived performance. But before we do our demo, and the demo is going to be about this new callout feature that's in 2013. You all have seen the callout. For instance, this is when you create a new document in your MySite. It's available on several other places, especially in the social and news feed. But basically, you have a small dialogue with the title, a content, a couple of actions down here. And you can trigger an event when someone click, when the callout is opened or when someone click on the callout, etc. So we're going to create a small callout here using the script on demand. And this is a feature that or a similar function that I've built up several of my customers lately. For instance, if you have a team site or collaboration site, you want some site information. Who's the owner? What's the classification of the site, etc. Metadata about the site that's present on all sites. So I'm doing this as a visual web part because that's the easiest to demo. I could do it as an app if I want to, but we do it as a visual web part. In our case, as a customer, we implement that custom control, full trust. Yes, I know. Not compatible with the cloud, but still. And this callout consists of a visual web part and a JavaScript file. First of all, if you take a look at the code here, the JavaScript file is in siteinfo.js. I added the script link with on demand equals true, so that when this is injected to the page, it will only inject a small JavaScript file with the name of the file. So it will be loaded later. Then I have some HTML. This span tag is the heading of not the heading of the callout, but the text I will click on to get the callout. So it's a small span tag. Then I have the actual content of the callout, what will actually be in the callout flyout when it comes up. And I set that style to display equals none. All this can be generated by JavaScript and everything, but for simplicity, I created it as a template here in the visual web part. Then finally, I have small lines down here. So when my siteinfo.js is loaded and the victor.siteinfo object exists, execute this function. This function will basically create and connect the callout to this span tag we had above. And the commented out section is just another way. There's different methods to call this, execute func or execute or delay until script load. The documentation is quite poor. Unfortunately, you have to test a bit to look at the default JavaScript in SharePoint, how Microsoft does it. I use either of those two. The first one, as you can see, I don't wait for any object to exist. And the second one here, I make sure that the victor.siteinfo object exists before I call it. So it's a matter of preference. If we take a look at my JavaScript file, it's going to be quite a lot of JavaScript. That's the downside with JavaScript. It's a lot of lines of code, sometimes a bit hard to follow. I could have made this demo really easy with a lot of functions, but I try to make it as I do in real world with JavaScript object that I create with internal methods, etc. The first thing you notice here is, of course, these references. I've added them so I can get IntelliSense in JavaScript. So I can get access to the SP init, and callout. So I can actually get good IntelliSense. They will not be used by the client at all. It's just for Visual Studio. Then I'd use this kind of notation here to create an object hierarchy. Make sure that we have a window.victor object, otherwise I create a new one of those. Then I create a victor.siteinfo implementation here, which is a function with internal methods and a couple of properties. And I return the init method I will only have one method in this one. So I return the init method, and that's the one we called down here. And this is created just as an object, like a class. So I need an object of this class, so I create that down here. And the final thing I do is call this notify script load and execute waiting jobs. So now I registered the file in the Visual Web part. I added my script to that one, made sure to run, registered this function to execute when siteinfo.js is loaded. So hopefully it should work. But before we take a look at it, let's see what happens when I call this init method to take a look at the callout. And I use the useStrict. Anybody in here know what that means? Some of you? useStrict is basically a JavaScript compiler instruction. It's a string in here, so it's backwards compatible, but the newer JavaScript implementations actually use this and make sure that you format the JavaScript in the correct way, and they can optimize the JavaScript execution even better. So it's no harm, and you there's no harm adding this for backwards compatibility since it's just a string. What's really dangerous is, you see, I placed this one inside my function here. If I placed it outside of here as a string, it will actually be for all JavaScripts. So I need to place it within my function. This is since I have control of my function myself. And if you notice in the previous, in my Visual Web Pop, I didn't add any references to the callout.js, where the callout is actually defined. So I do that in my init method. That is, not until until I call this init method that JavaScript is actually going to be loaded. So I call the register sod. First, I have the name of the file, or that's the name that's triggered in the end, that's in the end of the callout.js file, and this is the file path here. It's a bit difficult to see, but because it's in root in the 15 layouts. Then I register that, and then I use this execute func again. When that file is loaded, execute my function below here, and of course when the callout manager object is defined. Then it's very, very easy to create the actual callout. I need to get the launch point, and here's another of these built-in stuff in SharePoint, $get. It's very equal to, actually it's document get element by ID. You don't need to have jQuery in this case. So I use $get. Then I create the callout options object, point to that launch point where the user should click to get the callout. The content element in this case is the other, the hidden div I had there that I want to show in the callout. I give it an ID and a title, and then I add an event to that one. When the callout is opened, run this method, because I want to show information about the site in there. Then there's some code just to make sure I don't have duplicates of that callout. Finally, add two actions to this one, which are the actions below the callout. One with site contents, and basically what they do is redirect user to two different pages here that's available in site settings. But what's interesting here is the method I use, sp.utilities.utility.getLayoutsPageURL. Instead of concatenating the layouts page, _layouts, /15, /this, I can use this method to get the proper layouts URL for this site. So it's very efficient. And also, this is backwards compatible. If you, the callout doesn't exist in SharePoint 2010, but in those cases, you're making stuff that should also be able to run in 2010 compatibility mode. In this case, it will get you to the 14 folder instead of the 15 folder. So that's what's happened, just to show it. The load site info, which is called when someone clicks on it, it basically gets the three objects I have in that div, changing the title to loading. And here I once again use the sod functions to make sure the sp.js file is loaded. Basically, that's loaded on all SharePoint pages by default. But I've gone into the habit of making sure that it's loaded, just in case. And then I use CSOM, get the current context, get the current web, because I want the title and description of that web to show in there. How many of you have used CSOM in here? Yeah, I'm going to go through more details about that in just a couple of minutes. But basically, it's very similar to the server-side API. I need to get the context, get the web. Then I use this execute query async with the succeeded and failed method. And if it succeeds, I just get the title, the description, and put in those HTML elements. And then I also have a method if it fails. So there's a combination of a lot of things here. I use the script link, I use the script on demands, I use the callout, I use the client-side object model. It might look a bit complex in the beginning, and I had really hard time understanding CSOM from the beginning, but we'll talk about that in a couple of seconds. Let's just deploy this one. It's a full trust solution, so I need to deploy it, and it will recycle my app pool, so it will take a couple of seconds. Which is one reason to use apps. It's much faster development, since it's only deploying artifacts into SharePoint. It's not recycling anything. So let's see if the page can load. Take a couple of seconds. Working on it. And make sure you look at this as well. The URL up here now. Currently, I'm in MDS mode. I can see that since it's the start.aspx up there. Okay, it's loaded. So we add a new page to put this callout on. Callout. Create. Insert. Web part. Site info. Save. So basically, we have a web part here and the site info text. And if I click on that site info, the callout opens and it goes really fast. But it actually, you see, it sets loading for a millisecond there. But it's basically open up the callout using CSOM to get the information and populates that one. And I have these two links down here. So it's a very great way to add extra information to a web part, to a page, or whatever you're building. And this can be done all in JavaScript. I use server-side code here, but basically, you can do it in an app as well. So just take a look at the network trace here. I'm going to start capturing. Just a load page. Clear. So you can see what happens when I click on site info. It's actually a call to the _BTI_bin, client SVC process query. It sends requests and I get requests back with the title and description. One key question, this is actually for the big prize. Anyone knows what BTI stands for?
It's the original company that built the services.
Yeah, that's good. Vermeer Technologies, that's correct. That's actually a company that built FrontPage once upon a time, BTI. So you get the big spider here. Come and collect it later. That's good. So it's still with us. Before even SharePoint existed, we had FrontPage, and they used this _BTI. That's cool. Well, that was the first quite simple demo. But as you saw, I didn't do much, but it's a lot of JavaScript to make this happen. And that's the downside of JavaScript in many cases, especially when working with the client-side object model and you have this asynchronous execution. In the next demo, we'll use REST, and you see that that's a more efficient way to load data in sometimes. So something about client-side object model, I showed it to you here, but it was introduced in SharePoint 2010, and it's .NET and Silverlight and JavaScript implementations. I doubt many of us are using the Silverlight implementation anymore, but the .NET one is really good, using it a lot. For instance, with Office 365, then you can use the .NET implementation in Azure worker roles and fake timer jobs and that kind of stuff. But
The problem in SharePoint 2010 was that it only covered the foundation features. You could access lists and sites and get that kind of data. You couldn't get any user profile information. You couldn't use it for taxonomies, etc. So you couldn't do that much. In 2013, they introduced client-side object model for the social stuff, the publishing, user profile, search, taxonomy. So you can actually build real apps using or applications using the client-side object model. And the JavaScript CSOM is also known as JSON, if you see that acronym. There's a couple of caveats with JSON. If you use JSON, you're bound to that site collection. You cannot go outside your site collection. You cannot get the context from another site collection. So that's really important to have in your mind when you design your solution. The workaround is, of course, to use search. With search, you can access anything or use REST. Watch out for the cross-site scripting issues. And also, JSON can only be used within SharePoint. You cannot put it on your custom web application or a website and use JSON into SharePoint. It can only be used in SharePoint within that site collection. REST. How many of you have used REST in here? That's quite a few. Yeah, good. REST is great and really easy way. And actually, REST has been, it's like, just like AJAX. I'd used AJAX long before it was known as AJAX. It's iframes and XML, basically. REST the same. If we've been using SharePoint, we've been using REST for a long time. WebDAV is basically a REST implementation, but someone needed an acronym for it, so here we have REST. It's a bit more standardized now. But it's based on HTTP. It's GET, POST, DELETE, MERGE, etc. requests. GET represents a read, a POST, an add. A PUT is add, POST is update, and DELETE is, of course, delete. The key thing with REST is actually they define that it should be returned as O data. If we compare that to WebDAV, that was a very poorly documented XML that you get returned back. Or you can optionally return JSON, which is perfect if you're working with JavaScript implementations. This is really important. If you're working with REST and not using it in your site collection, in your site, if you're using REST from a custom .NET client or some other client, you need to post X-Request Digest header with your REST request. You can get that either from the Request Digest hidden form in the web page, or you can request to get the Request Digest using the API /context-info endpoint. SharePoint has a couple of REST interfaces, also introduced in 2010, but that was also very much tied to the foundation features. You could get list data, basically. In SharePoint 2013, we don't have the VTI anymore. It's called _API, and it's a really good implementation, and it supports a lot of features, including social publishing, search, etc. Especially search, REST is really great. Requires an auth access token if you're passing it from outside of SharePoint. You have to get that one. Basically the same as the X-Request Digest header. And a REST operation is built up like this. Here's a sample of an operation that we send with a GET request. That means that we will retrieve information. Normally we get back XML, but if we want to get JSON, we have to add this accept application /JSON semicolon O data equals verbose header to that request. If we're outside of SharePoint, we have to pass that OAuth token using the authorization bearer header. Now, first of all, we have the server URI, which is pointing to the web that we're getting the information from. Then we have the resource path, which is _API and web or search or whatever endpoint you're reaching to. And then we have a couple of filters or operation on this actual request. You could do filter, we could do a select, we can do comparisons, etc. And REST is really great because it's easy to use in combination with jQuery. For instance, if I want to retrieve all the lists in a JavaScript web part, I can use the jQuery.ajax. Just put in the server name here, _web/lists, and I will get back, in this case, a JSON result of all the lists in the web.
and I have a success and error function. And we will use that in the demo in just a couple of seconds. So if you're familiar to the good thing with this is you don't have to be SharePoint developer to develop for SharePoint. If you use CSOM, basically you need to understand SharePoint, how that works. But using the REST interfaces, which are nothing like any SharePoint development, it's basically REST that most web developers are familiar with. And they can use jQuery. So it's really easy to get new developers into working with SharePoint, which we've seen in our teams at our company. We can use our normal web developers that previously hated SharePoint to actually do really cool stuff with SharePoint. So, in the next demo, I have to switch over here. We're going to take a look at some knockout. Open project. Which one is it? Knockout? It's just, I'm going to use basically the same thing here. We create a visual web part. Once it loaded. A visual web part that will show the 10 latest documents in the document library in this case. For this, I use Knockout and jQuery. And first of all, let's take a look at the script I have down here. In this case, I have, first of all, up on the top, I have a reference, script link reference to my own library, Knockout list.js. And as you see in the bottom, I have the execute func here. When my Knockout list.js file is loaded, execute this function. But I want to load jQuery in Knockout libraries as well. So I create references or dependencies. So when my Knockout list.js file is loaded, make sure to load jQuery and Knockout as well. So I can create dependencies this way. And this line here basically is exactly what the script link on demand equals true does to the page. So I could put this as a script linked objects in the top if I want to. It's exactly the same. If we take a look at my Knockout list.js file here, how many have used MVVM patterns in here? Oh, good. A few. MVVM pattern is, it took me some time. I mean, used the MVP pattern before, but MVVM pattern, it was basically when I started building SAML applications for Windows and Windows Phone, I started learning that pattern. But it works really great in JavaScript as well. What I do is I create, first of all, an object of a document here. And the document has a URL and a title. Then I create a view model, and then here I use, it has a property called documents. And then I use the Knockout library here and create an observable array in which I add my documents. So an MVVM is that way. If you add anything into this observable array, it will actually execute functions. And you will have, instead of waiting for a whole list to render, you will get, as soon as something is added to that, the user interface will update. So you will get more faster responses in the user interface. And I deliberately made this demo a bit so it loads every document one at a time, adds information about the document one at a time, so you can see that the documents are rendered one by one. So I have my load documents here. I create a new documents view model, apply bindings to this model. Then I use jQuery and just do a get to the underscore API list, get by title, and the list name. Then I use get all the items, order them by modify, and get the top 10. Yeah?
So just the way you're loading up your JavaScript files and dependencies at the very beginning,
yeah.
Are you able to do that by content editor web part and just uploading the files into a library?
Yeah, basically. You can do everything this content editor web part and uploading the files to the JavaScript library. Yeah, exactly. So I done it just as a visual web part because it's easier to demo like this. But you don't have to compile it as a visual web part at all. Once I have this request, I run the documents loaded method, which we have down here. Let's scroll down a bit. And I get it back as JSON, so I can go through all the results using jQuery each, So I go through all the documents I get back, and I send another REST query to get the title, name, and server relative URL of that file. I could do this in one REST operation if I want to, but then the demo wouldn't be so cool. If I successfully get the document back, I push it into this document's observable array, create a new document with all the information here. There's a couple of helper methods in here if I get an error. And in the end, I have exactly the same I had in the previous model. I create an object of my implementation, and I notify. So if we deploy this one, and let's do it like this. So we see them next to each other. Deploy succeeded. We need to reload full trust code. So I need to recycle that pool. I want you to see on the right-hand side how the different requests comes in and how the user interface is immediately affected. So first of all, we have to create a page. Add a page, knock out, create, insert web part, add. If you saw there, they came one by one. They didn't came at the same time. And let's clear this one and reload the page. Which is really great. So if you have long running operations, for instance, they come one at a time. And if we take a look at this one down here, you see all the different REST queries sent. And this is IE10. You can use Fiddler if you want to look at what's in those requests more closely. Tip here is exactly what I did, to always use the filter or select operation here. So you only get what you are going to use. Otherwise, you get a whole lot of JSON back or XML back. You want to minimize the bandwidth. So always use the select statement here. It's basically the same you do in CSUM. You can specify, I want only these properties. I will put those demos on my blog later, so you can download it and fill with them yourself. But Knockout is really great creating these more dynamic interfaces. So for instance, I could have an add the next tab and show more here and easily just update them as we go on. So here, back to some slide. This is my favorite new JavaScript feature in SharePoint 2010. How many of, yeah? Yeah. No, the REST query doesn't care about the views. It cares about the different columns you have in there. So it's always showing. You can always get all of the properties. You don't have to specify view. Then there's a REST endpoint. If you want to get a specific view, yes. But by default, as we did now, get the document and all the items and all the properties. If I don't specify any select. Yeah. One more. The throttling, you mean? I guess so. Yeah, I have actually tested. Wayne is a throttling expert. Will REST queries be throttled? Yeah, I think so too. Actually, the implementation that is done for the REST queries is that there's no new code written for the REST endpoints. All the server-side APIs have an attribute and marks. This should be available as a REST endpoint. So if they want to add a new REST endpoint, it's just an attribute they have to add in the source code and recompile it. So it's a smart implementation that way. We have a question down there. Yeah, everything is security trimmed. Yeah, everything is security trimmed there. As I said, it's exactly the same code that runs on the server side, basically. And in this case, we're already authenticated. If we're running REST queries from some other place, we have to get an OAuth token and pass in the header so we know who it is. So we want to impress our end users with some cool stuff. In previous version of SharePoint, we made custom field types. It was a mess. How many of you have made a custom field type in here? There's a lot of file and stuff that needs to be done just to make a background pink on a column or whatever. So in 2013, a new concept called client-side rendering, or JS Link, which is more often known as, is introduced. And it's used to replace the rendering of columns or views or other thing with a set of JavaScript templates. We can use this on site columns, on content types, list views, list forms, and the XSLT list view web part if you want to. And basically, we inject a small piece of JavaScript that's responsible for rendering a column or a content type. And we use SP client templates to register these templates. And there's also a couple of things for SP client forms. For instance, if we want to edit the edit form, we can have validation and that kind of stuff in there. So a lot of helper methods for this. Unfortunately, not that good documented yet. Martin Hatch, I think, has a series of good blog posts on this while he's exploring these features. And basically it is, if you create a new field or site column, you add the JS link attribute and pass in your JS link file here. Can be done as full trust, can be done just by uploading sandbox web part, for instance. If you're using the XSLT list view web part, there's actually a property on that web part called JS link that you can just add the JavaScript file to. Here's another way of doing it. If you have a pipe character, you can add multiple JavaScripts. For instance, if you want to, use jQuery in your template, you can add pass in that one as well. And as you can see, it can be in layouts folder, it can be in the site collection or whatever. And we'll take a look at this as a demo, and now let's build a SharePoint app. I have this one basically the same in two flavors. One open project, we take the app one. Actually, I show you, because apps are not for the faint-hearted. It's a lot of JavaScript in that. I'll show you first how it looks like in my full trust code here. We're running out of time, I guess, as usual. 10 minutes, yeah. So basically in this one, I created a new field type and just add the JS link attribute in here. And that classification.js, if we go down to the bottom, of course, as usual, we always pass in this one. In this case, we're not using any SOD functions at all, but I took it as a habit, always add that kind of stuff at the end of my JavaScript files. But the key thing here is that we define a set of templates for the classification object. For the fields with the name classification, we have display form, we have the view, new form, and edit form. And for display and view, I add a custom template, and I register that template using the SP client templates object. And if we take a look at these templates, which are basically a JavaScript function, and this function in this case looks like this, get the current context, and I get the classification and check the value of that one. If it's public, it's blue, green, orange, and red, etc. So let's deploy that one so we can take a look at it later. So I'm taking control of the rendering using JavaScript here. So let's, while that one is loading and warming up, let's take a look at the app. Let it deploy and just refresh here. Meanwhile, and let's go back to the app. The app we have to do, since we cannot do we cannot deploy a site column this way, we have to deploy a site column using JavaScript. So what I've done here is created a blank app. First thing I did was to give full permissions here on the web for this oh, sorry, full permissions on the web for this app. And unfortunately, this is required to create site columns. And unfortunately, these kind of apps are not allowed in the SharePoint App Store. They are not allowed to have full control of the web. So I cannot sell this and would have been the next billion-dollar app otherwise. I have a page in my app, the start page. As you can see, there's a lot of JavaScript in here now, but I made it quite easy. The reason this is a lot of JavaScript in here, I actually added logging using knockout.js as well, so I can trace. It's a logging framework, a very easy one, that basically uses an ULI list here to just note down everything that I do if it's successful or failure. So we can skip that one. So it doesn't do much except loading this app.js file. If you take a look at the app.js file, I have a couple of help methods first. Then I have a provisioner object. And this provisioner object, apart from logging a lot of stuff, it will actually, first of all, provision a field. I just add the XML here. I use client-side object model to do this. Once it has provisioned the field, I'm about to provision a file. There's a lot of succeed and fail methods. And here's one thing you might stumble upon. When I'm provisioning the file, first of all, I need to get this file. That's a JavaScript file. I get this from my app and put into my host web, from my app web. So I actually have a module here with a file called app.js.link.txt. It's a JavaScript, but I have to rename it txt. Not in this case, actually, but for instance, if you want to provision .aspx pages, since it's a get request retrieving this, you want the source of the file, not the executed source. So that's why I got into habit to always rename this as .txt. So I get this file. Once it's done, I create the file in the host web, and here I put the real name of it, .js. So it basically create the field, upload the file, and we should all be set. Before we deploy that one, let's take a look at the other JS link. We should have a new site column in here. So if we create add an app, create a new custom list, test, create. And let's add our site column to this one. This was the first example with the full trust code, list settings. Add from existing side columns. Did I call it? Yeah. Classification. Okay. So let's go into to the list and just add an item. New item. Wayne. Confidential. And you can see now the coloring. It's a JavaScript rendering, that one. And the really cool thing with this is the new data grid we have here. It actually works in here as well. So this is a really great way to, I made a very simple example here, but you can have charts or graphs or images or whatever in this one. And it's really easy. And if you have an XSL to list view web part, instead of going to SharePoint Designer, you can create this JavaScript file, upload it to a document library, and just put that file into the property in the XSL to list view web part. And if you're on 365, for instance, you want to run this app we just built, click F5. In this case, yeah, in Office 365, you normally don't click F5. You deploy it to your corporate store in there and let the user install it. Yeah, basically any kind. You can, now I did it just for a column, but you can do for a content type, or you can do for a whole list. You can paint the whole row red, for instance, if it's confidential. So you can do a lot of stuff. You have access to the whole UI using JavaScript. My app, I have to trust it first. Once I trust it, it will go to my start page and start provisioning my field and file in a second or two. Come on. Here you can see my login framework. It's provisioned. Oh, sorry. I had some breakpoints still in there. So that's what the logging framework does using Knockout. So writing out everything I do. So if I load it once again, you will see that the file might already exist, field might already exist, but it still provisions a file. So if we go back to my host web and add a new app, we can do it on the same, just to make it more interesting. List, list settings, add from existing site columns, app field, test. Let's go in here, edit this list, and write something in here. And then in this case, it's only pink. Nice color. Oh, something interesting happened there. Why that? I shouldn't have done it on the same list. No, nothing works. Stupid. Oh, I have to look in that. Why that? Might be a collision of a namespace or something. But it's a really easy way to customize the user interface. Instead of previously, we had basically custom columns or using SharePoint Designer and some XSLT Voodoo to do this kind of stuff. But now it's a few lines of JavaScript, basically. So and it works in both on-premise and in 365. And a couple of notes. This might be one of the issues here, since we have the minimal download strategy actually that made this not work. The minimal download strategy basically is a JavaScript and server-side framework. It takes an hour or two to display by itself and go through everything there. And it allows, instead of downloading the full page all the time, it only downloads the delta. And there are some issues with that. When the first example we had, I didn't show you that, but you saw I had a JavaScript in my Visual Web part. And if the MDS finds that the page contains inline JavaScript, it will disable the MDS features and fall back to normal page rendering, for instance. And there are some interesting side effects, as we probably what we saw just now with the MDS framework, that the JavaScript file isn't loaded properly. But it's a really good feature, and you should test your solutions with both MDS and without MDS, because it improves performance, perceived performance in that case, and it reduces bandwidth. And of course, if you're using something like 365, you don't want to use that much bandwidth, especially if you have a long way to the data center. As you see, it can handle some JavaScript, but you really have to test with MDS enabled. Yeah, and that the funny looking URLs are due to the MDS. Yeah, and just a single line of JavaScript error will make it fail and get bad performance, because what happens if you get a JavaScript error, it tries to render it in MDS mode, then it fails, and it renders once again without MDS. So basically you have an invalid JavaScript on your page. Every page is going to be loaded two times if you have the MDS feature enabled. And this is probably what I forgot to do, register it properly, because you have to use the register module init method to register the events properly, because you need to execute the JavaScript once again once the page is loaded, if you're moving from one MDS page to another. On the server side, you can use the MDS client attribute to force it to not use MDS or make it compatible with MDS. So, we skip that one, don't have time. Display templates, Wayne, I think we'll go through that later. Also a lot of JavaScript in that one. It's really good, we get rid of the XSLT rendering, even though I thought XSLT was really good. Very documented way of creating your code, but most often it was spaghetti code, just like JavaScript is. But basically, we use HTML and JavaScript to create the display templates, and then SharePoint converts it to pure JavaScript, and Dwayne is covering that. So we're not on time. But JavaScript is really important for all kind of SharePoint development nowadays, I think. I think if you can do it with JavaScript, you should consider it and actually think of implementing a JavaScript. Of course, if you end up with 10, 15,000 lines of code, yeah, could possibly look at other solutions. It can be used for application logic. Here's a more another discussion. Should I show my application logic in JavaScript because anyone can see it? UI customization is a good example, and everyone should learn it. And there's a lot of JavaScript courses, and the first thing you do when you build a SharePoint app is basically using JavaScript. So it's really important to know. So that was it. There's a lot of other SharePoint stuff going on today. We have Wayne up next. And don't forget to stump the panel this afternoon. If you have any more JavaScript questions, then Neil and Wayne will answer that. So, yeah, that was it. Any more questions? We have two more things to give away. One back there. No. It's in the either it's use in this case it's user running the page, or you have to get an OAuth token from another user. Then you could fake if you have an application that's running under a service account, yeah, but you cannot elevate. No. You get this one?
What test framework do you use?
What? Test program. Yeah. Where would you? Who was? Yeah, there. Testing JavaScript is really hard. I don't have any good answer to what framework I'm using. Fortunately, my JavaScripts are most often not ending up in production. I'm the Visio kind of guy. So, but there's some JavaScript mocking frameworks out there. But JS Unit is one I've heard of. But no, unfortunately, I have no. In our current testing environment, I don't think we have any JavaScript testing more than the normal test flows when an end user clicks through it. So, no, there's no really good story there at the moment, in my opinion. You might have other opinions. One back there. Yeah, what you have to do, you have to record the requests, actually, and see those. But it's always difficult to test a user interface. It's in most cases, they're what's called a user interface testing in Visual Studio, which you can use to do some of that. Yeah. Yes? Yeah, you can use, in this case, if you instead of using SharePoint Designer or whatever other things to customize the edit forms, you can actually use this client-side rendering and JS Link to do validation or just implement your own JavaScript logic for that specific field or that specific form or content type. You can use anything you can do in JavaScript. That's a good thing. You get this one. Well, what's up? Is it lunch now, or it's one more session? It's lunch. I'll be here for a couple more minutes. I'll be here all afternoon. So if you have any more JavaScript questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you very much.